I don't even know our intro anymore.
Oh no.
I've been broken.
We're so not back, baby. Oh,
shit.
It's Jover.
Hey everyone, my name is Brandon Patrick. That's Sophie Green, and you're listening to the Super Lit Podcast.
Is this where the intro music goes?
The Super Lit Podcast is a bi-weekly podcast pertaining to books about the LGBTQIA community. Hello, Sophie.
Hi.
It's us.
We did it.
We're back again.
We read a book.
We read this book for Phil. She's Boots.
Wig.
And you know what? That's really tea of you. Do you want to tell the fellow queers what book we're talking about?
Yeah, we're talking about Eight Strings by Margaret DeRosia. It's a debut novel.
Yeah.
Which is exciting.
Did we read anything by Katie Quinn, the person that has the blurb on the front? That name sounds familiar.
We didn't read Diamond Eye, which is what the book they're attributed to on the cover, but that does sound like a familiar name, so I'm going to Google it real quick.
While you figure that out, shall I read Booksleeve?
Yeah.
Yesterday I was still a girl, not yet a boy or a man, never mind a puppeteer. Today my aim was more and less modest to survive. Venice, 1895. Ever since her grandfather introduced her to eight-string marionettes, Francesca has dreamed of performing from the rafters of Venice's popular Minerva Theater. There's just one problem. The profession is only open to men. When her father arranges to sell her into marriage to pay off his gambling debts, Francesca flees home. Masquerading as a male orphan named Franco, she secures an apprenticeship with the Minerva's eccentric ensemble of puppeteers. Amid the elaborate set pieces, the glittering limes. What the fuck is a lime? A light? Limelight? Is that what that phrase comes from? Okay. Where was I?
The limes.
Oh yeah, the limes. Fucking limes. Amid the elaborate set pieces, the glittering limes, and the wooden marionette, she finds a place where she belongs, and grows into the person she was always meant to be. Franco. The past threatens to catch up with Franco when his childhood friend, Anella, reappears and recognizes him in the theater. Now a paid companion to an influential woman. Anella understands how far one must go to survive, and she promises to keep Franco's secret. Desire sparks between them, and they find themselves playing a dangerous game against the most powerful figures of Venice's underworld. With their lives and the fate of the Minerva hanging in the balance, Franco must discover who is pulling the strings before it's too late. Rich in historic details and imbued with sharp social commentary, Eight Strings, in italics, is a gorgeous, spellbinding, coming-of-age debut novel that celebrates love, life, and the art in all its forms. I'm not kidding. I think that if I had read that regularly, I would have stuttered. I had to do it in a voice.
Okay, Mama.
The boots, the house down.
Yeah, what was happening? It was
I was putting on a character.
Mae West via Alaska, via Jinx Monsoon, via a cartoon frog from the 90s, probably.
Not afraid to reference or not reference.
Referencing, but also not referencing, because we're not sure where the references are coming from.
I'm not sure. The call is coming from inside the house.
The call is coming from inside the house.
I didn't read, when you said that we were reading this, I didn't read the book. I didn't read the book sleeve. So you were like, hey, this looks interesting. I was like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
So I didn't look into it before I agreed.
You just trusted me?
Yeah, I trusted you.
And how did that work out?
Good.
Okay, good. Just checking.
Yeah. I think it went well.
Yeah.
Did it go well for you?
No, I loved it. I had a great time.
That's a great episode. Okay. Nice try.
Anyway, outro music.
Yeah, boogie. Thank you for being a friend. Again, I don't know what that voice is. Yes, so the main character, their name is Franco. I didn't know that this is kind of like a trans allegory before we started reading it.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't know that when we picked up the book to read it. Also, this is a Canadian author. So right? I had to Amazon this.
Yeah, unfortunately, the book was published last year, but it's not being sold anywhere in the U.S. except through Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think also, I had to order it from Amazon because it is Canadian.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't know either.
I don't know why that would be.
I thought I could just order a book.
I thought you could just order a book. We should have just asked one of our many Canadians.
I mean, yeah, truly.
To send us an illegal copy.
Tom, Paul.
Charlie Ray Jepsen.
Yeah, let's get to work, girls. Yeah, so first things first, if you do like the sound of this book, you will have to get it through Amazon if you are in the States, I'm sorry to say. I really enjoyed Franco's character. Mm-hmm. When I was describing this book, I was having a hard time, I guess, using the wrong pronouns when I was talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
The book itself, not saying it as a person. Because in the book sleeve, it's like back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like Franco would prefer. But also Francesca previously, I don't know. And am I dead naming this person?
I mean, I don't think so, because I don't think that this book like exists in that kind of context.
Yeah.
Like that's language that's not really used. But
no.
I do think Franco calls himself Franco and is like, this is my new name and now I am Franco. And also would use he, him pronouns.
Yeah.
That's just like not something that would fit into the book at all, except if they were like super clumsy about it and they were like, oh, by the way, my pronouns are...
Whoa.
Well, because also the majority of the characters don't know that Franco is like disguising themselves.
Mm-mm.
Pretty much every single person is like, you're definitely a dude, man. You got bro stank.
Yeah, you smell like a man.
You smell like a dude.
Are you fucking girls yet?
You got short hair? You definitely a guy.
Guy, my dude.
You're a guy, man.
Yeah. Man, you're a dude. I'm a dude. He's a dude. He's also a dude. We're all dudes. Them at the theater.
Shout out to my dudes. Yeah, I think that's like, this is sort of a common theme with like a lot of like historical books that mm-hmm. have this thing is like, I'm not probably not explicitly saying like trans in the text itself.
Yeah.
But it's like an understood thing that like a lot of people lived as trans people, they just didn't have the language for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. I guess I need to be researching more about late 19th century Italy and trans people who lived there. Gotta figure that out.
Got it.
Need some historical context.
Let's do some research, mama.
I didn't do that, so I don't have that information, but yeah.
But, you know, mama...
But I thought about it.
But mama boots. I had to look up what a paid companion was, because I truly thought it was just a prostitute.
Yeah.
I think at the beginning of the book, because I was reading, like, three pages at a time at work, I, like, hadn't really gotten that far.
Mm-hmm.
But I read a good chunk of it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I think I read, like, 100 pages yesterday. And then I read 100 more today. The book is literally, I think, exactly 299 pages.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm never sure, because I have my e-reader, so it, like... Depending on what size font I set it as, the pages fluctuate between, like, 250 and, like, 500.
I love that there is a glossary in this book.
Oh, I didn't even know
I didn't that. Know that either.
Let's learn some Italian terms.
Yeah, so let's see. Book ends on page 299, and it's not even a full page. It's really not. There's a note to readers in here after the book ends, which I think would give us some historical background. I just saw the word pandemic.
Yeah.
I think the Spanish flu happens time after this. I really liked Margaret's writing style. It felt historical without being boring. I mean that in a nice way.
There's a list of sources in the back, and I will be hyperfixating on all these histories of puppeteering for the next
forever
couple of months. Oh, yeah. Queer Italia. See, I didn't even need to do anything.
It's right there in the book.
The author's got a bunch of books and texts in the back that give historical context, and also context for all of the puppeteering and all of the stage dynamics and stuff. And then there's a glossary of terms for all the Italian.
I love that. This book felt very thoroughly researched without, again, feeling boring.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a way that sometimes when you're reading a historically set piece, if you will, or vintage, as I like to say, it can get bogged down by, like, too much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not leaving enough to my imagination.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of glad I didn't know there was a glossary until the end, so I could, like, look at that. I sometimes, when I'm reading something and I don't necessarily understand what the word is, I try to see, like, context clues. I was truly imagining, like, a like a Romeo and Juliet set for the entire book.
Really?
Like, I was imagining actors, because I think the marionettes are so much a part of this book that I was imagining each of the characters as that.
Mm-hmm.
Not as a marionette, but like actors on a stage. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Because it is like a thrilling book, because it's like, will people find out? Like, I've been told that if someone finds out that I was born a woman and I'm like, in this context of this book, I'm like disguised as a man, that I will be murdered.
Mm-hmm.
So like it felt like very like thrilling.
Mm-hmm.
In the way that it was, like, anytime someone was like, oh, the ladies, and it's like, do they mean me? Like, it's
very high stakes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There are mafioso, I think they call them.
Mafioso, yeah.
Yeah, mafioso in here. The mafia. Yeah, the bada bing.
The bada bing, yeah.
Mafia in here. There's, like, it's, like, a pretty wild time. And, like, anytime, like, Anella and Franco were together and, like, someone was watching them, I was like, are they going to figure out that, like, they have a relationship from their past?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I felt like it was a very good, like, high-stakes journey set. To me, it really felt like it was, like, set on a stage.
Mm. It's interesting.
I think because, I think it's because it's so much of the story is about the theater.
Yeah.
And the shows that they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
That I just imagined, like, that was a show being, like, that was part of the show, if you will.
Mm, I will.
Yeah. And I will.
And I will.
And you know what? I will. Yeah, I had a very lovely time with them. And the climax of because it is like a, I guess, like a shorter story.
Mm-hmm.
It's not super long. I felt like when we got to page, like, let's say like 200, I was like, I'm aware that this book ends in 99 pages.
It was very that.
Yeah.
You get to a point where you're like, there's not enough pages to wrap up what needs to get wrapped up, guys.
Is someone just gonna die?
It's very, all of the, like, strings get pulled at once.
Like a marionette.
Pun intended, yeah. But it's very, like, everything sort of falls into place. Not that it ends with, like, a perfect happy ending, but, no spoilers. But, like, I think everything kind of just, like, falls at once, sort of.
I think the ending is as happy as it's gonna be.
I guess.
Is there anything that, like, specifically in the book that, like, sparked anything for you?
I mean, I love a puppet. I love puppeteering. I love theater.
Okay. I knew that part. Didn't know you loved puppets.
I love puppets. I love practical effects. I love a
Muppet. Oh, okay. Yeah, you do love a practical effect. This is
my favorite thing. Yeah. Jim Henson's one of my all-time heroes forever.
Mm-hmm.
This was very nice. I liked how integral that was to the plot, as well as just, like, it was interesting for me to read all of this stuff. Like, there's a lot of time that's spent talking about, like, the inner workings of, not like Victor Hugo levels were in the sewers for 12 chapters talking about that, but, like, I think it flowed well with, like, the dialogue and, like, the settings of the book, of just kind of, like, describing the different things. And, like, especially there's, like, a good chunk of the book where Franco works in, like, the restoration of the puppets. So they're, like, repainting their faces and, like, fixing their costumes. I don't know. It was just really cool. And then all the descriptions of them when they perform, too, being in the rafters. Chicken. You're interrupting the flow. But, yeah, there's like, a good chunk of time in the book spent during the performances, because also a lot of the stuff with Franco is interesting, just because he's literally, like, using his voice for the different puppets. So there's, like, a lot of, like, ironic jokes where the people are like, well, you can't do the falsetto voice for, like, female characters.
Exactly.
It's like Franco does, like, reverse voice training. And, like, T is not involved, but somehow, like, still lowers his voice.
Yeah.
One of the dolls taught him.
Yeah. One of the literal dolls.
One of the literal dolls taught him.
Yeah. That's what I was saying. Like, when I was saying that it's, like, kind of high stakes, there's a point in which there's a specific show by a certain bard that I will not mention because it's part of the story. Franco gets picked for, like, a woman's role. Like, he has the woman's marionette puppet.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh my god, what's going to happen here? Like, are you going to have to, like, break yourself of the, like, mask voice that you've been doing?
Uh-huh.
And, like, will people notice? Like, what if you do it too well?
He's going to have to use his customer service voice.
Oh no. Not that. You were saying something, but that was like part of the thrill.
Who is your favorite character?
I really liked, is it Radio or Radillo?
I don't speak Italian.
Yeah. R-A-D-I-L-L-O.
So, yeah, probably like Radio.
Yeah, okay, Radio. I really liked the owner of the theater.
Yeah.
I thought that he was like an interesting character because he, you know, that when you're like an orphan, you're referred to as a foundling. Mm-hmm. Franco is like, part of his ruse is that he is an orphan in the street, so he's a foundling. And he basically waits outside the Minerva Theater until he sees people going into it. So you can be like, hey, I want to work here.
Yeah.
I promise I'm not just like some schmuck.
Yeah.
Like, I actually know how to use a puppet.
I'm talented.
I know how to use a puppet or two. And I can read. That's important.
Oh, right.
Did they teach women to read back then in Italy? I know that sounds incredibly stupid.
No. Again, not brushing up on my Italian history, but...
Because they weren't... Oh, wait. They were kind of rich family. So that's what I was saying. Yeah, I was thinking.
I think that was going to be based more on class and gender.
That's... Okay. Yeah. I could be very wrong. I don't know this historically because I'm thinking of Franco as an orphan, not Franco's past life where they come from like an okay off family, if you will. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Part of Franco's ruse is that he's a foundling and that like comes up a lot in the book. Like a lot of the, like that's kind of like part of the setting in Venice that there's a lot of orphans.
Yeah.
Because this is right around the time that Italy like got Venice back from Austria, I think it was. I like that Radio is like kind of like, oh, I don't really want any more like foundling, because he had one that like thought he was too good at the end of the day, like theater. Yeah. And you know, the owner of the theater is a little, you know, scarred from it because his best friend just ran away. But he like takes in Franco and is like, fine, I'll give you a chance. Mm-hmm. And then immediately gets into a fight with one of the guys. A fist fight.
Love that.
Yeah.
If you are introducing me to a new character and you want me to love them, have them fight full fist with the protagonist and then get up afterwards and like shake each other's hands and be like, hey, what's up, buddy? And they're both just like destroyed because they just beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
Insane behavior. You're my favorite.
Just a bunch of guys being dudes.
Love when men fight.
Love when men are guys.
Some guys. Dudes rock.
Dudes being guys is so hot.
Yeah, but another thing is, like, when Franco first gets there, Radio has, like, a very, very strong rule that's, like, no women whatsoever in the rafters.
Yeah.
No, like, he doesn't let his own daughter work. Like, very... So that's just, like, another thing where, like, you don't have the same threat because Franco's running away from father and then the person that his father's trying to get him to marry.
Yeah. Who's one of the villains in the story.
Yeah. So there's not, like, there's not so much of, like, a drastic threat of, like, being found out, but there's also, like, okay, this person is, like, kind and taking care of Franco, but also, like, what will he do if he finds out? It's a lot of scare.
It's a lot of scare, but it's, like, I feel like it, like, kind of fuels the story in a way that, like, it pushes it forward really well. Mm-hmm. I liked him the most. Who did you like?
Carmine. The idiot that beat him up?
Yeah.
I love, I should have known the answer to this story. I'm a sucker for a dumb idiot. You know I love the stupid sidekick, and also he has, like, a very, like, sappy, like, overly wrought romance happening in the background with another character, and I just love I just was picturing, like, the most Italian man and just, like, really beautiful, like, tanned man. Mm-hmm. And just being, like, really overly dramatic and, like, soppy. And, like, and he wasn't written this way, but in my head, anytime he had any dialogue, it would be, like, hand on chest, reaching out, like, very, like, I'm literally...
There was a redhead.
Yeah, very that character. Very, like, Brock Pokemon. Yeah. Also, like, always in love. That, yeah.
Yeah.
Love him. Big, big fan.
Horniest motherfucker you've ever met.
My other favorite side character was Michaela.
Oh, the woman who owns the bar?
Yeah, the woman who owns the bar, who I think rather quickly catches on to what is going on with Franco, but is extremely stealth. She was giving me lesbian bartender, I'm here to protect...
Her name's Michaela. Yeah.
The queer's right. Energy. Yeah,
that sounds right.
Yeah, exactly.
It feels right to me.
Feels right. It's right and it's okay.
It is right. And it is okay.
And it is okay.
I like that neither of us mentioned Franco or Nella.
No, it's not that I didn't like the main characters. I did like them and I found them interesting. But mm-hmm. I also love the silly little guys more most of the time.
You are a silly little guy.
I think everything was happening with Franco and Anella was a little bit more serious, which I also still really liked. I think that the way Franco was written and, like, his relationship with transness was very good because mm-hmm. it was obviously constantly, like, something that was thought about. Like, a lot of Franco's inner monologue, I would say, is, like, being concerned about not looking, like, making sure you look masculine enough, making sure you're comfortable, but, like, only to a point. The very beginning of the novel, you have the, for lack of a better term, like, Mulan transformation, where Franco's being basically rescued by his grandfather.
Yeah.
And they, like, cut his hair, they give him chest bindings, give him mm-hmm. men's clothes to wear.
Yep.
A good chunk of the beginning of the book where Franco describes watching the men around and, like, mirroring their actions and their posture and, like, really, like, leaning into it. Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, it just becomes, like, natural. And it's like,
yeah.
Oh, no, this is just, like, how I'm meant to be on this earth, actually. Like, yeah. I'm just actually, like, finally
Wait
comfortable.
Wait a minute.
Which I thought was, like, very interesting. And I really like that as kind of an exploration of transness without being explicit. I mean, it was, I think it would be, I would, if someone asked me, I would say that this is a trans character.
Yeah.
But again, in the context of the book, the actual text written, there's never, like, a moment where
no.
they're like, I'm a trans man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
But it's just, like, at a certain point, just becomes, like, I'm no longer trying to, like, mimic a man. Men. I'm
simply men are just trying to mimic me.
Yeah. Well, no, because, yeah. like, it hits a point where he becomes, like, working in the theater, he's getting muscular, and then all of the people start writing articles about him in the paper. He's, like, so dreamy and young and cute. It's yeah. like, oh, wow. Short King.
Yeah, true. I literally just read an article, I think it was, maybe it was on The Cut, I don't remember, but it was like, I am obsessed with, like, a short trans mask king.
Yeah.
It's because it's just, like, they're so short, and they're just, like, they're, it's just, everything about it is so hot. And I was like, yeah. Also, I know that we normally talk about this at the beginning, but I would like to say that I really like the way the book covers. I love the book cover.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And
yeah.
I got the paperback and it has the, like, raw edge pages.
Love that in a book.
Oh, my God. So, there's a sex scene or two in this.
Oh, yeah. Keep going.
The leather strap? And it just being leather?
I'm obsessed.
Do they make leather dildos? Like, that's not yeah. sanitary, right?
Was the dildo leather?
Yeah.
I thought it was wood.
Again, that doesn't seem sanitary.
It doesn't seem sanitary.
Yeah, no, I mean, but it's the time and place, if you will. But yeah, there's a few sex scenes in this. They're not, like, explicit in any way. It's very, like, hidden away, like, secretive. It felt, like, very much, like, young queer person's, like, first time, like, very intimate.
Mm-hmm.
It was written really well.
Oh, okay.
What are you looking at? Tell the class.
I'm Googling the history of dildos.
Okay.
I mean, okay, so, like, this is, like, a thing, I think they've found things that look like phalluses and stuff from 28,000 years ago. This is, like, a known thing. I mean, ancient Greece.
Yeah.
They were, every day.
They were trying to get shlonged.
It definitely was, like, a thing that I think became more popular in society in, like, the late 1800s, early 1900s, because the French are little freaks.
Yeah, they are.
And they were selling little dildos to all the people, all the rich people.
Mm-hmm.
But I just found this, like, little snippet just as far as materials goes. But Science Museum in London includes several dildos made from wood, cloth, or ivory. The ivory one is from 18th century France.
Is ivory a porous object?
Well, it has to be because it's, like, a natural thing, right?
It's not stone.
It's like bone.
It's bone, so it's
probably
porous.
The same thing, yeah. So again, probably not sanitary, but also, yeah. like, both of those sound better than cloth.
Yeah. What's the cloth made out of?
Oh, I have a picture of it. It's like a beanbag dick. Sorry.
Beanbag dick looking heaven ass bitch.
It does. I'm so sorry. No, I do. I really like that they had that, they included that scene, though, because I would say that this probably has a new adult level of sex in it.
Yeah.
So it's very fade to black.
Yeah.
But there is definitely, there's, like, sex scenes more than just, like, implied. I thought it was interesting to have that as an element of the scene. I will say that there is some non-consensual sex in this book, but it's not depicted. It's just spoken about.
Yeah.
So just, like, you know, keep yourself safe. But I think it was, I think overall it was, like, a really nice book that I would say was, like, a pretty positive representation of, like, queerness, especially for, like, a historical novel.
Yeah.
It's definitely not...
This ending is happier. Traumatic. Yeah. This ending is happier than any, I think, historical queer piece that I've read that felt realistic.
Yeah. I think I can think of a few that also are nice, but the majority is, yeah, unfortunately.
I feel like you might have read other ones that I haven't. I'm trying to think of ones that we've read on the podcast that are, like, grounded in reality. They're not, like, a magic world.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know of many historical dramas that we've read.
I think most of our historical books have been set in the 20th century.
Yeah, and also have magic in them.
I was thinking of Last Night at the Telegraph Club and stuff like that.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, I mean, that doesn't really have a great ending, does it?
I think it is a perfectly fine ending. I'm just thinking now. I'm going through the Rolodex in my brain.
Franco isn't being sent away in this, whereas Last Night at the Telegraph Club, it's like a... Oh, honey, you're what? Oh, no, we're going to send you to be with your aunt who's a rocket scientist.
No, but didn't it end nicely? Like, years later.
The follow-up book, I think, is the one.
Is that who I've been thinking of?
Yeah. Because there's Last Night at the Telegraph Club is the one book, and then the follow-up, which I think is, like, a shorter story, is about her relative doing research, and the character from the Last Night at the Telegraph Club is in it. As a, like, mentioned character. Last Night at the Telegraph Club was a very good book, though. Yeah. I'm not saying it's not.
No.
Because that was an amazing book.
Yeah.
That, to me, felt harder to read. In a way of, like, there's blatant racism. And it's just, okay. Like, so casual.
Yeah.
I felt like that was, like, a harder read in terms of, I'm feeling whiplash right now. Like, emotional whiplash. Whereas, like, maybe because this didn't take place in America. I'm not, like, embarrassed by... any of the things that are going on.
Oh, because all of the, like, horrible people are just Italian?
Yeah, which they're just... they're probably really just yelling at each other in Italian.
I mean, there was...
Why aren't you gabagooling over for dinner tonight, Johnny? Well, I don't know, Tony. But it's really, like, no one's actually fighting. A gun just happened to go off by accident at Bada Bang down the street. You know?
There was definitely some racism happening, but no, yeah, I don't think it was, like, the center of the story.
No.
Yeah.
That was like part of that book, whereas in this it's not necessarily something the main character has to do with.
No.
All the time. Do you have any other thoughts about the book?
I mean, I have thoughts, but I have, like, spoilerly thoughts, so, like, I don't want to say too much.
Okay. Everyone, in this book, we find out something about the main character, about Franco, about his father. Without saying anything, did you feel that at the beginning?
No.
I did.
Interesting.
So weird.
I've never once been able to clock a plot point, though, so, like...
Yeah, because this isn't a murder mystery, that's why.
No, well,
this is a murder mystery, all of a sudden your brain grows 12 sizes, and you're like... Actually, Brendan, no, it was identifiable on page 3.
That's not true at all.
I feel like you're so able to do that.
I never am able to do that. Everyone is the suspect.
Yeah.
I'm never right.
I'm like, no, it can't be this person. I would be...
Well, I'm right sometimes because I suspect literally everyone, so I have to be right at least
once. If this was a Scream, like, movie, I would get Sidney Prescott'd so hard but die.
No.
Because I wouldn't be like, no, my boyfriend couldn't have done it, you know? And then he would kill me.
No, I don't think I clocked that at all. I don't know. I think, like, a certain point in the book, I was like, oh.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, I was still like, oh, okay. And then, like, towards the end of the book, I was like, oh.
No. Well, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It just felt like maybe it felt right. And then it was, like, revealed, like, oh, this is... And I was like, oh, shit, I am right. I have to be.
It was, like, a little cheesy, but that's okay.
I love that. Anything else? Did you learn any Italian?
No. Bada bing.
That's...
Giuseppe. Piscotti.
That's... One of those things is Italian.
I know what Piscotti is.
One of those is also a pizza restaurant. Giuseppe is the pizza
Palazzo.
Restaurant. Palazzo. Palazzo pants?
Piazza.
The Piazza in Philly?
Rio.
Bianca? Wait, isn't Adele also, like, a body of water?
Adele?
Yeah, Del.
Yeah.
Isn't that a body of water type of... So, like, Bianca Del Rio, that's two bodies of water?
Yeah.
right? Adele is a, not a, like Adele, like D-E-L, period.
My house.
A.
Yeah.
Where are you from?
My house. No, I know what you're talking about, and I think
divorce
that's
correct. Divorce babes.
No, I think that's true.
Yeah.
No, I really like this book. I think if you're looking for, like, a somewhat historical novel that has some queerness in it, you'll enjoy it. I think if you're looking for a historical novel that doesn't have queerness in it, you'll still enjoy it, even though it's gay.
I think
this is, like, a book that I would, like, kind of recommend to anyone, I think.
Yeah. Because I think it... So... Part of this book is that I genuinely hoped it would have a happy ending. I think it has. I won't say what. I think it has a pretty happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
Part of, like, what Franco does, like, these plays at the Minerva, he sees that the pit, which is where all the, like, poor people... I hate to say this. All the poor people.
That's true, exactly, yeah.
It just feels funny to be like, the poor people! The poor people in Venice, they are able to attend the shows of the Minerva... At the Minerva in the pit, which is, like, you don't pay as much.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really see as much. It's not as good of a, quote-unquote, as an experience.
Standing room. Yeah.
And then the rich people are, like, upstairs.
Yeah.
In their own little balcony things. Mm-hmm. And part of what Franco loves about the Minerva is that the poorer people interact with the show. It's, like, part of the pit is, like, they will jeer, they'll cheer, they'll yell, they'll... You know, they give you live feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I appreciated this story because it shows the dichotomy of, like, a civilization, if you will, especially at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
And this, like, the one thing that unifies them is the Minerva and this theater and, like, going to these shows. The thing about, like, the Minerva shows is that Franco, the crowd will not respond well no matter how well the show is unless it's a happy ending.
Yes.
And I really appreciated that, especially, like, in a play. Like, you don't want to go see something so sad. Like, Romeo and Juliet is very I mean, we would.
Thinking about the time that my university was putting on a production of The Glass Menagerie, which is, like, one of my favorite plays by Tennessee Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember bringing my roommate at the time. And I was like, I had a great time, but it's an extremely depressing play.
Mm-hmm.
And I left it being like, that was such a good production. Yeah. I, like, my theater brain was like, that was a great production. The actors were really good. Fire, it was nice. I had a great time. And she was like, why did you take me to, like, the most depressing play in the world on your birthday? And I was like, I don't know. I wanted to be sad, I guess. But I, like, I had a good time. I understand. I think that that's a thing that is pretty, like, a common theme, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, like, how historically accurate that is, but I feel like I've seen it enough that it makes sense. But it's always kind of baseline to appease, like, the common man, who are, like, the people that, like, most of the theater troupe wants to appease, because they're the people who, like, encourage them, are always there.
Yeah.
They want the simple story with the happy ending, and the villain is just an idiot who can't do anything, right? Like, a bumbling fool villain. Like,
yeah.
Very, like, black and white characters. Like, the hero is heroic.
Yeah.
The, like, lead female is just, like, pretty and a damsel. Like, very that.
Yeah. Millie Bobby Brown. Hidden Valley Ranch.
And I think... Oh, and then there's another... There's a little later in the book, there's also, like, more of a conflict where I would, like, one of the main villains.
Yeah.
Once, who is also, like, the patron of the theater, so, like, she has a lot of manipulation power and stuff, wants to have the production be in Italian.
Mm-hmm.
And Franco's like, we can't do that because the people in the pit literally will not understand what we're saying.
Yeah.
And they will not be able to follow the story.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be good.
No, it's bad. Yeah. Because they're also the ones that actually come back and give us live feedback. The rich people will just not show up.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I didn't like it. I'm not coming back. Yeah, I really liked that is, like, both part of the book itself and also, like, the shows.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it's kind of, like, not a requirement, but, like, it can't, like, Romeo and Juliet, we would need to change it. Pinocchio, we need to change it.
It's like when they do junior productions of musicals for, like, middle schools and stuff, mm-hmm. they'll, like, cut out more, like, dramatic or, like, complicated songs, like,
yeah.
Anything that, like, kind of makes the plot a little bit more than just, like, basic. They, like, edit it down for
yeah
kids.
Yeah, exactly.
It's cute, yeah.
Kids bop.
Kids Bop. It's the Kids Bop of theater, for sure.
Yeah. I know we were talking about that for a reason, but I think that if we were suggesting this book to people, I think there's, like, a lot of good in it, and I feel like you said, like, I could suggest this to anyone.
No, yeah, I think this would be a good book to read.
Yeah. I was describing to my coworker, and I was like, oh, yes, Franco, like, disguises themselves so they don't get, like, sold into marriage. And my coworker's like, isn't that wild that, like, that was, and I mean, still is, but, like, that was a thing specifically, like, during that time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I haven't thought of, like, arranged marriage or, like, being sold off into marriage mm-hmm. to, like, pay debt. I haven't thought of that.
You're telling me that I could pay off my student loans if I just let someone marry me?
No. Oh. Your dad would sell you off to pay off his gambling debts.
He doesn't have those. His gambling debts are my student loans because he gambled by sending me to college.
I don't know. Did he?
I don't. We've yet to see a result.
You're so smart.
I use words that are big. You do. Sometimes.
Yeah, big. To big act words. Smart. Yeah, man.
More than two syllables.
You have great art conversations.
Art.
Yeah, art. 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 But. Yeah, I had a great time reading this. Once I actually, like, got into it, again, that's on me, not the book. I don't like saying, like, oh, this was, like, I couldn't get into it.
No, you're good.
Because I actually did get into it. I did get into it, sis.
I got into it, Mama. Yeah.
Mama Wig. Boots. Yeah, no, Slay. I did get into the book. I think the characters were really interesting. I was rooting for the romance. I liked the you know, flock of fuckboys he worked with.
I loved all of the people who worked in the theater.
Yeah.
They were all great.
I like how, like, Leo at the end, they tried to, like, kind of make them more friendly with each other, too.
Yeah.
I think it was a good, like, ensemble, if you will. Obviously, like, there were hard parts in the story to read because of, like, thrills and, like, will they discover Franco's secret or not? I really had a great time reading this. I would be interested to see, like, what they come up with next.
Yeah. Author.
My coworker, when I was describing it, she was like, wait, why is it called Eight Strings again? I was like, oh, it's like a specific type of marionette that uses like the eight strings. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh, wait, really? I was like, yeah, I'm not a puppet person, so I don't know a lot about them. But I feel like I learned like an okay amount about them.
I will say, mm-hmm. personal preference, my only real critique is like the last line in the book is very cheesy.
Yeah,
it's very sweet, it's extremely saccharine, it's not bad. I just like read it and kind of was like, okay.
Did you just read it again?
I just looked at it again and I was like, okay, it's not bad, it's just very saccharine.
So would you say that the epilogue wasn't called for?
I don't think I needed the epilogue.
I don't think you ever need an epilogue.
Most of the time, I don't really enjoy epilogues. Mm. I think, like, once you hit a point where the characters are sort of completed with their story, I don't really need to see, like, a flash forward. I think it was kind of nice mm-hmm. because of, like, sort of the circumstances at the end of the book. Yeah. But I also, just, like, personal preference, usually find them just kind of, like, okay. I don't know. I would... It's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I don't normally...
I wouldn't disagree with you for this book. I
don't dislike them. Yeah. They're, like, neutral to me.
Yeah,
they're,
I wouldn't disagree like with you for this book. I think that if it hadn't been an epilogue, it would have been fine, but I was perfectly fine with it having an epilogue.
Yeah, it's a net neutral.
An even happier ending. All right, well, this week we have been talking about Eight Strings by Margaret DeRosia, and again, I got this, not to say to send you to Amazon, but... I had to get this through Amazon because it's a Canadian release. It was still, like, again, great, great book. Try to find it somewhere other than Amazon.
Maybe your local library has it. Who knows?
Maybe I'll buy another one from Amazon and donate it.
Donate it to the library. Yeah.
So Philadelphia will have exactly one copy. But yes, my name is Brendan Patrick. That's Sophie Green. And that was also Chicken and Shadow at different points. And you've been listening to the Superlit Podcast.
We're so back.
We are so back, baby.
Play that outro music.